Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio.
Right, I'd like to welcome to the Indie Prime podcast, Paul Kavanagh. Paul Kavanagh is also better known as the Winge... Well, I'm going to start that again.
Winge.
He's a Winger.
Nationalist grievance.
Winge.
Oh, it's all right.
You've upset the dog now. The dog's whinging. Right, start again,
right.
You should just leave that bang.
Welcome to the next Indie Prime podcast, and with me is Paul Kavanagh, also known as the Wee Ginger Dog. Hello, Paul.
Hey there, mate.
Paul, you've been blogging for the independence movement now for quite a number of years,
yeah.
But I'd like to go back for listeners who aren't aware of your history, maybe give some information of how did you start blogging, why did you start blogging, what was your original writing in relation to, how did you get to where you are now?
Well, I drove here, but that's by the by. No, I've actually been doing writing about independence for a long time, and it was back when I still lived in Spain. I lived in Spain for 15 years, and my late partner, Andy, well, we later discovered it was vascular dementia that he was suffering from. But in the earlier stages of that, we were still living in Spain. I used to publish an English language features magazine every month.
Right.
It was funded by its adverts. And, you know, it was articles of interest to English-speaking people living in Spain. And that's how I made a living for quite a while. It was a good way to make it. That's actually how I learned how to write.
Right. You
know, people say that, oh, no, I don't know what to write. I've got writer's block and we get all angsty about it. But when you're editing a magazine, you know, and it's going to the publisher, it's going to the printer in 12 hours' time, and people who promised to write you an article have let you down for it, and you've got four empty pages that you've got to fill, you sit down and you write something. And what you discover is that there's no such thing as writer's block. There's only I can't be arsed.
Right.
You know, and when your arse is on the line,
yeah,
you can be arsed. You just sit down and you write something. And that's really how I learned how to write.
Uh-huh.
So it was writing about, you know, it was about Spanish history, about Spanish culture. It was about, you know, the practicalities of living in Spain as, you know, as a European citizen, as we all were. And that closed down when the Spanish economy went down the toilet.
Right.
And one of the big advantages of doing it was that I was able to do it at home. You know, I sat in the spare room and I typed away, and that was good. Now, like I said, my partner Andy at the time, he'd had a few bad falls, he'd had a couple of strokes, and when I closed down the magazine, I was actually offered my old job back. The job I used to do prior to doing the magazine was I was an interpreter for a property management company in Spain.
Right.
And I used to go and interpret at public meetings, and I would translate, you know, contracts and all this kind of carry on from Spanish to English. And they actually offered me my old job back, but it would have meant being away out the house for protracted
period, not
for the
not
whole working day, maybe, you know, 12 hours or more.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I'd really rather you didn't, because I could have a fall. And, you know, I could be lying on the floor for 12 hours until you get back home.
Yep.
So I would really prefer you not to go out to work. So we had a look at the finances, and it was tight financially, but we could just about manage on his... He was a retired policeman. We could just about manage on his police pension. So I started to get... I would comment a lot on Scottish politics sites at the time. You know, this was back in... We're talking about 2010. Kind of a time, you know, long time ago. And I'd comment on the Blether with Brian blog, you know, when the BBC actually still allowed Scottish punters to comment on Scottish politics online.
Yep.
And I got to know a few people who were regular commenters there, and, you know, in other forums, so we'd swap email addresses and we kept in touch. And one of them was G.A. Ponsonby, went on to found Newsnet Scotland.
Yep.
And it started off as a newsletter, an email newsletter. And I was one of the early contributors to it. You know, I would write about Catalonia or whatever. You know, anything that particularly took my fancy, I would contribute an article. And then one day I says to him, you know, like, you've got some good stuff in this. You know, you've got some really good stuff. But the spelling and punctuation is atrocious. It's really bad. You know, and I used to publish a magazine, and I'm telling you that you might think that the important thing is the information that you're presenting. But if you're presenting that in a kind of a slapdash way, a careless way,
yeah,
it reflects really badly. And people think, well, if you can't be bothered to check your spelling, you can't be bothered to check your facts either.
Aye.
And it looks bad.
Yeah.
You know, so I says, you need to get on top of that. So I says, I used to be, you know, a magazine editor, so famous last words. You need a sub-editor, I'll do it until you find somebody. And that's how I got sucked into it.
Yeah.
And that's what I always say now, you know, that when I finally shuffle off this mortal coil myself, that's what I want put on my gravestone. It was like, I corrected apostrophes for Scottish independence. Because somebody had to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's how I got sucked in, and I started to get more and more involved in Usenet. And then, of course, Newsnet started, we got funding from a Scottish guy who lived in Australia to give us a proper digital presence, a website, you know, with an interactive website, with a comments facility and all that. And we launched that in the run-up to the Scottish elections in 2011. I think it was launched, it went live, I think, in the January of 2011. You know, the election was in the May that year. Yep. And we were gobsmacked by the response. I mean, we honestly were not prepared for the response that this site was getting. There was obviously an enormous demand for news and opinion and commentary in Scotland from a pro-independence perspective that just wasn't being answered by the traditional media in Scotland.
Yeah.
And we really weren't prepared for the kind of response that Newsnet got, you know. And it came across, all, you know, that there was all these mad conspiracy theories that were this big shadowy organisation that were secretly funded by the SNP with, you know, thousands and thousands of pounds. And we weren't, you know, it was basically, it was three guys, a woman and a dog.
Uh-huh.
You know, basically that's what Newsnet was, you know. Yeah. So we were all slaving away, you know. And, uh-huh. I mean, and it was a lot of fun. It was really, it got quite fractious. A lot of times we fell out. We had huge fights with one another and all sorts of things. But, you know.
What organisation doesn't?
Exactly. But, you know, we'd argue about the comments for something, you know, and, you know, some people didn't want to have comments and other people wanted to censor them all. And other people say, well, no, you should let people say what they want. But it was just all this, you know, just a whole lot of stuff. And, but that's how I started doing it.
Yeah. I gather you were, the BBC were big fans.
Oh yeah, big fans. As Ken McQuarrie, the former BBC director in Scotland, referred to us as those bastards from Newsnet, which is a badge I wear with pride.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not on the BBC very often, not at all, actually. Uh-huh. So anyway, I was doing that, but Andy's health was deteriorating throughout all of this, and it was getting to the point where it was obvious that he had a really serious condition. It was obvious that he had dementia. And it took me 6 months to persuade him that we need to go back to Scotland. Well, I say back to Scotland. Andy was English.
He had
no connections with Scotland except through me. He'd never lived in Scotland. But I knew that in Scotland, I could get the support I needed to care for him.
Right.
In Spain, the medical treatment is fantastic. The hospitals are wonderful, but they've no community care.
Right.
Whereas in Scotland, they do.
Yep.
You know, and that's what we're going to need. So we moved back to Scotland. We put the house in Spain up for sale. We moved into a rented flat in Ridley in the East End. And the plan was, when I moved back to Scotland, that I was going to take over as the editor in Newsnet Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, just after we got back, Andy's health just fell off a cliff.
Yep.
You know, it just plummeted. He just got really, really ill. He was in hospital at one point. Actually, they thought he had pancreatic cancer.
Mm-hmm.
They thought they were talking that his lifespan was like a couple of weeks, kind of a thing. You know, as it turned out, he just had a really bad case of pancreatitis, and th- Thankfully, it wasn't the pancreatic cancer, but it was just really bad. You know, it was really bad. And it was obvious at this point that I couldn't continue with Newsnet because, you know, it's a small team of people. Everybody depends on everybody else. There was no way that, you know, because his health had deteriorated so badly, I couldn't leave him unattended to go out to meetings. I couldn't go and interview people. I couldn't do things that might need to be done. And also, if his health took a turn for the worse, as it did, you know, that's what I needed to deal with. So it would mean that I couldn't even guarantee I was able to keep on top of the regular news cycle the way that you would have to. So I had to withdraw from Newsnet.
Yeah.
And then it was over the summer, and it was the Independence referendum. This was 2013. And the Independence referendum campaign was starting to kick off, and there was all sorts of things happening. And it was really frustrating because I wanted to get involved, but
to contribute.
I couldn't because I was stuck at home as a full-time carer, you know. And I couldn't get out of the house. I couldn't leave him unattended. And I wanted to do something. But also, what I discovered was, I mean, when you care for somebody who has dementia, you expect that, you know, little by little, they lose all those facets of their personality that make them who they are.
Yeah.
And all the memories and all those things that make that person who they are. And that's the tragedy, the horror and the tragedy of dementia.
Yeah, my father was the same.
Yeah. And you expect that, and you sort of kind of try and prepare yourself for it as much as you can. But what I didn't realise as a full-time carer looking after someone with dementia was that I was also losing all the things that made me who I was. Because you become so invested in this full-time role as a carer, you don't have time or energy for anything else at all. That's all you do. And you become totally defined by this caring role.
Yeah.
And I started, I thought, well, I got a laptop and I thought, well, what I can do is I can sit down and I can write a blog, you know, I'll write a wee blog because then I can type away and I can publish it on the blog and I'm sitting in the living room with Andy in his chair, you know, and I'm there if he needs me. And I can write about things that are about the independence referendum and it's got nothing to do about his care needs and hospital visits and doctor's appointments or nurses coming or care assistants and all the stuff that completely takes up your entire life. It was a little escape for me to do that. So I started to publish the blog and that was in October 2013. And I was maybe getting a couple of dozen people, you know, reading it. And I just kept publishing, basically, pretty much every day. I'd publish something new, you know. And at the time, it was kind of trial and error. You didn't really know what people were going to read and what they weren't. But you just keep on doing it, you know, because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Plenty to do, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I just kept doing it. And it just, it was gradually building up. Slowly, I noticed, because you can see in the site statistics, you know. And it was gradually building up and building up. But it really took off the next spring when there was the Claire Lally incident, you know, when Claire Lally was introduced to the Scottish public by the Labour Party as an ordinary mother and carer who was going to vote no. Now, Claire Lally is, she's a mother of a child with special needs and, you know, and you know, as someone else who was a full-time carer, I know that's no bundle of laughs, you know, but Claire Lally's position as a no voter had very little to do with the fact that she was a full-time carer and an awful lot to do with the fact that she was very closely involved in the Labour Party. She was an advisory member of the Labour's National Executive Committee. She was the chairperson of a local Labour group. You know, so there was this, none of this was mentioned.
Right.
You know, when the Labour Party, she was just an ordinary mother.
Yeah.
You know, her connection to Labour Party politics wasn't mentioned at all. And when it came out that, you know, this was all out, she was identified as, you know, her Labour Party connections were identified. She was wrongly identified as being a relative of Pat Lally.
I remember that.
Who was a former Labour Lord Provost of Glasgow. And she's not related to Pat Lally at all. She just happens to share a surname with him. She's got no connection to Pat Lally whatsoever. And the story then became in the Scottish media that Claire Lally was being abused by vile cybernats who were lying about her, you know, and the story, you know, being abused means that people say that you're a relative of a former Labour Lord Provost of Glasgow, you know, which, to be fair, is pretty abusive. But anyway, it was my mum. Up till that point, I'd always avoided writing about care issues on the blog because it was my escape and I was concerned to protect Andy's privacy and dignity. You know, he didn't ask for me to write this blog. You know, he, to be honest, he was scarcely aware of what was going on by this point. But, you know, I was concerned to protect his dignity and privacy. So I didn't really talk about what was going on with me as a carer, you know, when I was writing the blog. And it was actually my mum that said to me, you need to write about that. You need to write about this Claire Lally business, she says, because you really are an ordinary carer, you know, and you're going to vote yes. And besides, you are actually related to a former Labour Lord Provost of Glasgow. And I was like, don't abuse me, mother. You know, stop it. You're abusing me. But it's true. My dad's cousin is Alexander Mawson.
Right.
He's a distant cousin. I've never met Alexander Mawson. So I don't know the man. My dad's parents separated when he was a kid. So we'd no connections with my grandfather's family at all. So I don't know any of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, Alexander Mawson's my dad's cousin. So I'm related to, you know, a former Labour Lord Provost of Glasgow. Yeah. So I wrote a blog about how I really was related to a former Labour Lord Provost of Glasgow and I was voting yes. I was an ordinary carer who was voting yes. And that article went viral. It was like shared all over the place.
Yeah. You know?
And that's really when the blog, the wee gingerbread blog, kind of took off.
Yeah.
And I noticed after that there was a lot more hits and a lot more retweets and a lot more shares and stuff. So yeah, so and that was really heartening because that was the time. It was a very difficult time in my life, you know, because Andy's health was bad, you know, and it was obvious he had a terminal condition.
Yeah.
You know, and you know that it's only going to end the one way, you know, something like vascular dementia. And you keep on hoping that they're going to, you know, have a bit longer and they'll continue to be stable. But it's inevitable the decline that they face, you know. Yeah. So it was very heartening that to do the blog and you were getting that kind of feedback and support from people. What was a very difficult and painful time personally. So that's how I got into it, and I just kind of kept doing it, really. And it seemed to have turned into a full-time job.
It certainly does. Now, we, Ginger, Doug.
Yes, that's a lie. Media lies.
He's not that
way. He's not that way, as you well know. He's not that way. No, he's not very wee. Right, when I did the magazine, we used to advertise for local animal rescue charities in Spain, you know, so stray cats and dogs. And I stopped doing that when the magazine closed down. Now, we used to have a big dog and a wee dog, and the wee dog had died, and Andy, my late partner, he liked wee dogs. So he wanted another wee dog. I wasn't keen, but he wanted another wee dog. Excuse me. And then it was a couple of months later, and I'm like, no. We're not getting another dog. I've got you to look after. I've got the dog to look after. Because the other dog was old at this time as well. She was a lot of work too, you know.
Yeah.
So I got up one morning and he was going on about, I had this wild dream. He says, it was so vivid. It was so real that I dreamt that we had this dog and we called it Ginger. And I've got this image in my head of this dog with this wide head and a short muzzle and a wiry ginger coat, a curly tail and white socks on his feet. He says, but the weird thing is, he says, you were in Scotland with the dog and people were all going on about Scotland becoming independent. And I went, okay, fine. Now, this was 2009.
Right.
You know, there was no prospect of an independence referendum or anything, or even us moving back to Scotland.
That's amazing.
At the time. And I'm like, aye, okay, fine. And I had my breakfast and I went and I checked, turned on the computer. And lo and behold, there was an email from an animal rescue charity. This was about 6 months after I closed the magazine down. There was an email from an animal rescue charity saying, you know, can you advertise these four dogs for us, please? You know, in your magazine. They were based up in Elche, which is the most southerly Catalan speaking town in Spain. And just out of curiosity, I looked at the photos and I wondered, I thought, my God, that looks awful like the dog he was talking about.
Uh-huh.
So I just put the picture up on the screen and I called him over and I pointed at it. And he's like, that's that, that's the dog. Where did you get that picture from? Like in a really accusing tone, because he used to be a police, and he never really got away from it. Really accusing tone, that dog, where did you get that picture from? Did it belong to somebody that we used to know? And that's why I was thinking about it. And I told him what it was, and he's like, oh, that's a sign. That's a sign, we've got to get it. So So I contacted the animal rescue people and I drove up to Elche that afternoon and they said, fine, you know, take the dog home, see how he is. If you want to keep him, keep him. If not, bring him back. Mm-hmm. And they brought him out and the very first thing I said when I saw him was, he's an awful lot bigger than he looked in the photo. And I put him in the car and I brought him home and the first thing Andy said was, he's a lot bigger than I thought he was going to be. That was that. So that's how we got the wee ginger dog. And everything that he dreamt about has come true, except we're still waiting on the independence. But
not long to go now.
So I reckon. Yeah, no, it's there.
Yeah, fate. That was a super story.
So he's definitely the sort of spirit animal of the Scottish independence movement, dog, for some reason.
And unfortunately, obviously, your partner died.
Yeah, but Andy passed away on the 3rd of September 2014.
Timing.
Just, yeah. He actually got his postal vote just a few days previous. And I took it to him in the hospital. He was really weak. He was really ill at this point. And it took him 20 minutes to sign his name and to put the X in.
Yeah.
You know, but he did it and he voted yes for independence. Yeah. You know, I was so proud of him. It was the last thing he ever put his name to.
Yeah.
Last thing he ever put his name to. And I burst into tears when I posted it. Because I just knew that this is the last thing he's ever going to sign.
Uh-huh.
I just knew. So I did and he posted it. And I know he'd have been disappointed that Scotland didn't vote yes that, you know, a few days later, but I think he'd have been really proud that the way that we didn't just give up, that we didn't you know, the way we said, right, we're going to hold you to account for these promises that you made to us, you know.
Fired us off.
Exactly, because that was the big mistake that the anti-independence parties made in 2014, you know, and I remember watching them. You know, that night on the telly and they're all dancing.
Celebrating. I know.
It was like back to business as usual. I thought, no, you're wrong. You are so wrong. Because Scotland has changed.
Yeah.
Scotland's changed forever. And we will hold you to account.
Yeah.
We will make sure that you fulfil these promises that you've made. And if you don't, you know, you will be held accountable. And that's exactly what's happened. They didn't. Of course they never. They had never had the slightest intention.
No intention.
Keeping the promises that they made to us, but you know, we're holding them to account. So I'm convinced, I'm actually more convinced now that we'll become independent than I was in 2014. So
there's a total different air about it now. The hype that we had, it's more calmer. I feel that when people are getting more educated.
Yeah.
They're learning about reframing, they're learning about the facts. Obviously, we're in. Waiting for some aspects from the SNP, obviously. We've had this growth commission. There's lots of debate on the pros and cons of that. What's your own thoughts on that, by the way?
Well, I think the biggest change, actually, is the fact that independence is normal.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, the idea
we're just taking it in a stride.
Exactly. The idea of independence is now normal in Scottish politics in a way that it wasn't for a long, long time. It was always kind of on the margins.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't an idea that was taken seriously. It was kind of scoffed at. It was laughed off. You know, that's never going to happen. But now, whether you support Scottish independence or not, you have to take the idea of it seriously.
Yep.
You know, because it's the very fulcrum of Scottish politics. It's the thing around which everything in Scottish politics swivels. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's the key idea in Scottish politics at the moment. And it will be until Scottish independence is achieved.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest change. Mm-hmm. The realisation that Scotland, there's no reason why we can't. So it's up, in a sense, it's now the onus is on people who oppose independence to give us reasons why we shouldn't become independent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as it is for us to prove the reasons why we should.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I think the biggest change has been since 2014. Because in 2014, they were able to say, you know, oh, but Scotland, if, you know, you'll be a much-loved equal partner in a family of nations, you know, you'll be safe in the European Union, we'll give you all these extra powers, we'll do this, we'll do that, you know.
We'll make your parliament permanent.
Exactly, we'll give you a permanent parliament and all these things which have just been proven to be bollocks.
Oh, and you can have loads of ships built on the Clyde as well.
Just
tax offices, you know, we'll add to them.
Yeah, you can have all this investment in renewable energy. You know, all these things that they promised us and that's just turned to dust.
Yeah.
So now I'm struggling to think of what kind of positive bribes that they can offer us, you know, in a future independence referendum campaign that people are going to believe.
Because many undecided voters who probably eventually turn to voting no, since that time, are going to be so much more aware of the promises that were not kept.
Exactly.
And they're weighing up every single day. Whereas I feel the word independence or self-determination becomes normal to talk about and consider or think about, that in everyday news,
right,
you can think, well, would it be better? How much better could it be if we were independent?
Well, I see, I think in 2014, an awful lot of people, I was struck constantly by the number of people who said that, you know, they had no theoretical or moral or philosophical objections to independence, but they weren't persuaded by the arguments that were being put forward at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So they were open to persuasion, but they just weren't persuaded.
Yeah.
But what, there was also a significant number of people who were willing to give Westminster and the Westminster parties the benefit of the doubt. And I think that's what's going now.
Yeah.
There's far fewer people willing to give them the benefit of the doubt because of the way they've behaved over the past 5 years.
See, that's where I came in, you see, because I couldn't believe, as an Englishman who's lived here for over 40 years, knowing the history, I could not believe how Scots could be taken in. I says, please don't listen to these lies. Because I only came in to the independence movement simply because I was suddenly getting all these stories of, you know, you can't do this, or you can't do that, or you're not big enough for that. I thought, wait a minute. Don't tell me we can't do this and we can't do that. But so many people have fed that for so many years. Exactly. It was because of the psyche. Yeah, so it never became, as an Englishman or like a new Scot, someone comes up, comes to Scotland from, comes from Europe or America or wherever to live. They don't have that. We don't have that thought.
We've been brought up for generations to believe that everything Scottish is basically crap. Everything Scottish is rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, it's the contempt of the familiar.
Yeah.
And if it's Scottish, it can't be that good. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way that we were brought up for so long. You know, that we needed this shelter of Westminster to protect us. Not just to protect us from the outside world, but also to protect us from ourselves. And that was really struck because, you know, that we weren't really civilized. And that came across, you know, in the Better Together pitch that was made in 2014, that Scotland needed Westminster in order to ensure that we would have democratic, civilised politics.
Because if we
didn't, you know, we would descend into this Caledonian anarchy.
Yeah.
Because essentially there's this kind of British view, you know, it's essentially racist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the peripheral Celtic nations of the United Kingdom need the tender mercies of Westminster in order to raise them up to some level of acceptable civilization.
And that was something. Excuse me shaking my head in this room. It's awful.
But that was something that was very prevalent in Scotland, you know, particularly in the early years after Union in 1707. Mm-hmm. You know, that Scotland went through this whole phase of anglicisation in a very self-conscious way.
Yeah.
Because we were elevating ourselves out of barbarism into the Enlightenment, and it was thanks to the tender mercies of the British state that we were able to do that, you know.
Yeah.
And that's something that became really ingrained in, you know, the Scottish unionist tradition, you know, and it's still there. You can see it in the newspaper comments, the frothy variety, you know, that Scotland, we're just not able to do the things that other countries can do. You know, we're just, you know, we're the only country on the planet that can't have currency. You know, those kind of things, you know.
Because I wonder how many people have actually died going into a money exchange, you know, for travel bureau.
It's shocking.
Changing some pounds to euros or pounds to dollars. How many fatalities have occurred, you know?
It's a bloodbath.
It is, yeah. Because I can remember it back in decimalisation, you know, the funeral directors were having a field day because, you know, decimalisation came in. Pension, the pence was out the window.
Yeah, I remember that day.
Actually, I can't remember how many hundred thousand died.
My brother flooded my granny's bathroom. That's the only thing I can remember. And I remember going to the ice cream van with some old money.
Yeah.
And not getting new money in my change and being really disappointed.
Yeah.
I remember that.
I can remember a quote in the press. So, it was, why couldn't they have waited for all the old people to die?
Yeah.
Right, before we wrap up then, Paul, you're now with the National podcast and the Dubcast.
No, I just do the Dubcast. They do their own podcast.
No, but you still got the Wee Ginger Dog blog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Do the Wee Ginger Dog blog.
You're active going around with the National, whether it's the National,
but I also do other speaking events, just you know, when people invite me to, and I'm always quite happy to come and prattle on for whatever.
Yeah.
To local Yes groups or SNP groups or whoever around the country. And we've been all over the country now. Ginger is now an extremely well-travelled dog.
Yeah.
He has been everywhere in Scotland, pretty much. Uh-huh. So the only places we haven't been yet are Shetland and the Western Isles. Still hoping to get there.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm enjoying it. I mean, I'm really enjoying going to places of Scotland that I wouldn't otherwise visit.
Yeah.
You know, and some it's a fantastic, you know, it's such a beautiful country, and seeing so many talented and resourceful people that are involved in this grassroots independence movement, it really is. It's humbling and it's inspiring at the same time.
Even though a referendum hasn't been called, we know it's on the way. How different do you find it just now in relation to the build-up to 2014?
Well, I wasn't really actively involved in the build-up to 2014 because my circumstances at the time. But what I would think is that we're a lot more prepared for it now.
Uh-huh.
Because we're going into this second campaign with the support of half the population.
Yeah.
Crucially, with the idea of independence normal for people.
Yeah.
Whereas we had to establish that in 2015.
Yeah. We're more relaxed now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But most importantly of all, we're going into this campaign with hundreds of thousands of committed independence supporters who know how to campaign.
Yeah.
We have a mass grassroots movement.
Mm.
You know, people who know how to deliver messages, they know how to persuade people, they know how to talk people, because we've done it before and we've not ceased to do it ever since.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm convinced that, you know, that we will win, because we don't have to persuade that many people this time.
Not at all.
You know, people say, oh, but why haven't the polls changed already? And it's because, well, most people aren't that interested in politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd rather just not think about it. And they won't think about it until they've got a reason to, in the shape of a date for a vote.
Yeah.
You know, that's when
that's the focus of attention then.
That's when they'll start to engage with it.
Yeah.
And that's when we can start to change minds and to change opinions, and that's when we'll see a shift in the opinion polls.
It must be really ironic for the mainstream media, who are always painting negative stories whenever they can, of the way the Yes movement, the grassroots movement, is actually steadily just growing.
Yeah, but they've done it the wrong way. I mean, not that I want to give, you know, when your enemy's making a mistake, you shouldn't interrupt them, but they're picking the wrong target. They're using the SNP as a proxy for independence.
Yep.
That's what they're doing. And they think that by attacking the SNP, they can attack the concept of independence. But that's fundamentally wrong, because independence isn't about... I mean, obviously, the SNP is by far and away the largest and most influential pro-independence organisation, largest independence party by far. But independence isn't about the SNP.
Mm-hmm.
Independence is about Scotland and Scotland's future. You know, Scotland, when it's an independent country, will be a democracy. You know, there will be people in this country who vote Ruth Davidson. There will be people in this country who vote for whatever happens to the Scottish Labour Party. You know, all these options will still be available in Scotland. And the SNP, I don't think, will last in its current incarnation long after Scottish independence is achieved, because at the moment it's a very disparate party with left and right wings that are being held together by this common belief in Scottish independence. And once that is achieved, you know, I suspect that those parts of the party will start to go their own ways. You know, the entire Scottish political landscape will change after Scottish independence. Scotland will be a democracy. You know, so you can't attack the idea of Scottish independence by attacking you know, how one particular party manages a devolved administration. You're fundamentally, you're attacking the wrong thing. But that's all we've got, and that's what we're going to keep on trying to do. And that's why I think that we will win, because they're fixated on playing with this as though it's party politics, when it's not about party politics. It's about something much, much bigger than that.
Yeah.
It's about the future of the whole of Scotland. One of the things I have been struck with, and it was looking at what Progress Scotland were doing, Angus Robertson's new initiative, mm-hmm. and attracting, you know, soft no voters and people in Swithin, you know, about yes or no. And what really struck me was, now, it's certainly it's very important that we continue to produce a, you know, a strong and a positive message for yes. That's vitally important. But what struck me about those people that had shifted from no to yes, it wasn't that they'd been persuaded by this great new case for yes. It was that they had become disillusioned and disenchanted with the British state.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And I think what we need to do in this independence referendum to come is to talk about the disadvantages to Scotland of remaining a part of the United Kingdom. Because paradoxically, you know, those kind of things that people were fearful of losing in 2014, you know, the NHS and, you know, public services, you know, education system, all the things that were the product of the post-war settlement in the United Kingdom. The things that the people of that generation really really prized, mm-hmm. and were afraid of losing with independence. Paradoxically, the only way we can preserve those things, those quintessentially British things in one sense, is with independence.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to protect the good things of the British state,
uh-huh.
you need to vote for Scottish independence, because those are under threat and under attack by the British state like they've never been before. And make no mistake, the Conservatives do not want to take Scotland and the rest of the United Kingdom out of the European Union in order to turn this country into a paradise, a utopia of workers and employment rights. Mm. They're doing it because they want to burn, you know, they want to burn through regulations, they want to burn away what they call red tape, which are workers' rights, employment rights, health and safety legislation, the kind of things that give us a decent and better quality of life.
Yep.
And they want to destroy all that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the future that's in ahead of us if we remain a part of this so-called United Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm confident that Scotland, when it does get a chance to vote, and it will get a chance to vote, it will vote to become an independent country. And that's going to be sooner, I think, than most of them like to believe.
I agree. Paul, thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure. I
look forward to inviting you back for another Indie Prime podcast in the future.
Good stuff.
Thanks very much for your opinion.
Right, cheers.
Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio.